Fine. Okay, good. Are we ready?
She asked.
How do I look?
She did a little twirl and I swallowed hard. She looked sexy as hell, like the sort of girl I'd have been proud to introduce to my mom, and the sort I'd hope I'd get to bring home with me after a night out. But she wasn't. She was Callie, and this wasn't a real date. But damn it, she looked amazing. You look all right, I lied.
I guess that's good enough.
She grabbed her giant handbag and slung it over her shoulder. Do you really need all that? What do you even keep in there? She glanced down at her bag.
No, probably not. I'm just used to carrying it around.
Looks like you could live out of that thing.
I have lived out of it.
She patted the bag.
More than once.
Fine, let's just go. I turned for the door.
We don't have to go out if you don't want to,
she said. I paused with my hand on the doorknob. What makes you think I don't want to?
I don't know. You just seem kinda grouchy tonight.
She wasn't wrong. I was wound up so tight I felt like I might snap. Flexing my fist, I took a deep breath. I needed to calm my ass down. I didn't even know what had made me so fucking irritable. I don't mind, I said without turning to look at her. Dinner at Moonshine sounds good.
Okay, if you're sure, because dinner at Moonshine sounds amazing. I haven't eaten there in so long.
I cracked a smile and glanced over my shoulder. It's the best. She smiled again, so pretty it almost hurt to look at her. The scar on her face made her lip curl at an odd angle, but it was cute, distinctive. And right there was a part of what had me so edgy. Looking at her sent my emotions spinning out of control. She was beautiful in ways I'd never expected. But that scar on her face was a constant reminder of what her father had done to her. The mix of desire and anger was potent, almost intoxicating. I didn't have an outlet for any of it, and it was making me a grumpy bastard. Grumpier than normal, anyway. But none of that was her fault. You don't look all right. You look beautiful, I grumbled. The dress is nice.
Thank you, Gibbs.
She stuck her hands in little openings in the dress and twisted back and forth a few times.
It has pockets.
I chuckled. She really needed to stop being so goddamn adorable. She was killing me. We went out to my truck and I opened the door for her. Figured I could drum up some manners. I drove us into town and parked outside Moonshine. She waited while I got the door for her again, took her hand to help her out. There was that smile again, making my insides feel all twisted. Without really thinking about it, I clasped her hand while we walked. It was small and soft against my calloused palm. It felt good. Moonshine Diner had been a staple in Bootleg Springs for as long as I could remember. Hadn't changed much either, which I appreciated. Still filled the block around it with the scent of good cooking. Most of the tables were full tonight, but there was an open one near the back. The din of conversation hushed for a few seconds when we walked in. Heads turned, people watched, some whispered to each other. I held Callie's hand and ignored them. It only took a few seconds for people to go back to their dinners, the noise level rising again. It was working. We were hiding her in plain sight. Clarabelle appeared next to our table half a second after we sat down.
Hey, y'all. This must be Maya. I'm Clarabelle. So nice to meet you, sweetie.
Thanks,
Callie said.
Nice to meet you, too.
Oh, Gibson Bodine, I'm plum tickled you brought her in.
Clarabel said. She turned back to Callie.
I've been dying to meet the girl who finally tamed this one. But with everyone else in his family pairing off, getting themselves engaged and whatnot, it's high time he settled down, too.
Callie gave me an amused smile.
You think he's ready for that?
Oh, sure, they all are, sweetie. It just takes some of them longer to figure out what's best for them.
All right, Clarabel, I said. Can we just have our menus?
Of course.
She handed us each a menu. I put mine down without looking.
Can I get you anything to drink to start?
She asked. Water.
I'd love a sweet tea,
Callie said.
Coming right up,
Clarabel said, then walked away. Callie leaned across the table and lowered her voice to a whisper.
She looks exactly the same. Do they still have those huge waffles with the whipped cream topping?
For breakfast, yeah. Her eyes lit up.
Can we come back in the morning?
God, that smile. Sure. She scrunched her shoulders and went back to her menu. Clarabel came back to take our orders and thankfully left out any more relationship commentary. Our food didn't take long to come out, an open-faced turkey sandwich for me, roast beef with mashed potatoes for Callie. Sally Mae Brickman walked by our table no less than 8 times during the course of our meal, pretending like she'd forgotten how to get to the restroom, and I heard people whispering things about us as if they didn't realize we could hear them. About time that Gibson got himself a woman in his life. With all his siblings fixing to get hitched, it's a good thing he found her. They make a cute couple, don't they? I still say she's a mail-order bride. Callie stifled a giggle with her hand.
Mail-order bride?
I rolled my eyes. I don't know where they got that one.
About that, I've been meaning to ask, did you find me in the online catalog or the print version?
Print, I said, not missing a beat. Your hair really stood out on that glossy paper. She fluffed her hair out.
Ah, so it was my mermaid hair that sucked you in.
God, Callie, everything about you is sucking me in. Must have been.
Well, I'm glad you picked me. Although, if I'm a mail-order bride, where's my ring?
She held out her left hand, fingers splayed. Clarabel stopped at our table right as Callie said, "Where's my ring?"
That's a good question, sweetie.
She lowered her voice as if somehow that was going to keep Callie from hearing.
Gibbs, if you're fixing to pop the question to your lady, let me know. We can hide the ring in her dessert.
Simmer down, Clarabel. That won't be necessary. Callie stifled another giggle. Clarabel shrugged.
Suit yourself, but if you ask me, not enough of y'all are getting engaged in my diner. It's a perfectly romantic spot.
Has anyone gotten engaged here?
Callie asked.
Sure have. Ricky Grant proposed to Susanna Varney right there where you're sitting.
That must have been 25 years ago, I said.
Most likely,
she said with a smile.
It was an exciting day. That's sweet,
Callie said. Clarabel took our empty plates.
Sweet as my strawberry rhubarb pie.
Speaking of, can I get you two lovebirds some dessert?
Lovebirds? Jesus. No, just the check so we can get out of here.
All right, don't get your britches in a bunch.
She glanced at Callie.
You sure, sweetie? I have some lemon meringue pie that's a little slice of heaven.
Thanks, but dinner was so good I couldn't eat another bite.
Clarabel smiled and went to get our check. I took some money out of my wallet and dropped it on the table. It was more than enough for dinner and a nice tip. Too big of a tip, what with Clarabel's questions about rings and engagements, but I just wanted to get out of Moonshine. Callie put a hand to her stomach while we walked to my truck.
I'm so full, but it was so worth it.
Glad you enjoyed it.
What's next? Bonfire at Scarlett's?
That's the plan. I opened the truck door for her again. Kinda wished it was my charger. She'd look damn good in the front seat of my baby. We drove down to Scarlett's place, a little postage stamp-sized cottage on the lake. Because she was Scarlett, it was cute. And although she and Devlin were pretty cramped living there together, her little scrap of beach was great for a bonfire. I parked among the cars and trucks already here. We got out and wandered down to the beach. Music played from someone's stereo. There were two coolers full of beer, and a whole mess of people stood, sat, laughed, danced, and drank around the fire. Jameson was dragging what was basically a tree trunk toward the already large bonfire. Bowie and Buck helped him hoist it onto the pile, sending a flurry of sparks into the sky. I said the requisite hellos to my sister and Devlin. Scarlett squealed with excitement and made sure to address Maya by name loudly. Leah May and Cassidy were more subtle, greeting her with friendly hugs. June and George arrived with June's pet pig, Catherine. George joined Bowie and Jameson while June found a spot off to the side and opened a book, using her headlamp to light the pages. Callie and I sat on one of the old logs that served as a bench. I hesitated for a second, glancing around, then gently put my arm around her. It was what a boyfriend would do. I expected her to stiffen or shy away, but she didn't. She nestled in closer, letting her arm drape over my leg and rested her head against my chest. The lavender smell of her hair was strangely relaxing, and her warm body felt good tucked up against mine. There was nothing awkward, nothing forced. This didn't feel like pretending. It felt like she really was my girl. And the craziest part was how much I liked that idea. I was about as anti-relationship as a guy could get. Somehow my siblings had sailed into adulthood still willing to take a chance on love. Not me. Maybe it was because I was the oldest. I remember too much of what my parents had been like. Sure, they'd had their moments, dancing in the kitchen, smiling together, acting like they didn't feel trapped by marriage and family. But those moments weren't what had stuck in my memory. When I looked back, I saw the fighting, the resentment, the regrets. I decided a long time ago that I wasn't going to do that to myself, and I wasn't going to drag someone else down with me either. But ever since Callie had shown up at my door and jumped into my arms, I'd been thinking things, dangerous things, and with her leaning against me like this, soft and familiar, it felt like all those reasons I'd held on to didn't matter nearly as much as I'd thought.
"Hey, Gibbs, how about a song?"
Buck asked. He held an old acoustic guitar out toward me. Callie sat up, and I reluctantly dropped my arm to take the guitar. I settled it in my lap and strummed a chord, out of tune. Took me a minute to tune it, but when I was done, it didn't sound half bad. I plucked the strings, letting a song come to me. "Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys" felt right. Long title, but a damn good song. Someone turned off the music as I strummed the opening chords and sang the first line. A few bars in, a voice joined me. Callie's. We'd sung this song together 100 times. Of course, no one else knew that. No one else in Bootleg had really known she could sing. She found the harmony easily, and I shifted so I could see her while I played. The firelight reflected off her glasses and made her skin glow. Her sultry voice mingled with my deeper tone. She sounded different now. I'd noticed it the other night. Teenage Callie's voice had been soft and pure, like a bell. Maya's voice was richer, sexier. It was mesmerizing. I lost track of everything but the music, the heat of the fire, the people dancing, talking, laughing. It all went away. It was just me and Callie alone in the woods again, singing an old favorite. The song ended, and the party erupted in whoops and hollers. My eyes stayed locked with hers. She smiled at me, and my heart nearly beat right out of my chest. I was in big fucking trouble.
Chapter 14, Maya. Life in Bootleg Springs moved at a different pace. It was slower, more relaxed. People lingered on the street corners to catch up on the latest gossip, stopped to help their neighbors bring in groceries, brought people homemade muffins and jam in a basket just because. It was a far cry from life in the music business, touring, moving from city to city, waking up in a new place every few days, sometimes without really knowing where you were, long hours spent in the studio with the constant pressure to deliver. I'd been here less than a week, and I could already feel myself acclimating. It helped that I wasn't working. I checked in with Oliver again and let him know I was staying in the area to take care of some personal business. He said he was glad I was taking a break. Gibson had an order to fill, so I'd spent the last couple of days happily relaxing at his house while he worked. As promised, he'd taken me to Moonshine for breakfast twice, and their waffles were just as delicious as I remembered. In addition to eating too much, I'd watched a baking competition show and subsequently ruined 3 batches of macarons thinking I could duplicate what I'd seen, practiced yoga in the field outside his house, and painted my nails to match my hair. It was the most downtime I'd had in ages, and it was surprisingly nice. I didn't usually slow down like this. I went from project to project, city to city, always moving, never sitting still. The sun was shining this afternoon, so I grabbed my handbag and went outside. Gibson had a single chair out on the back porch, facing a view of the woods beyond. I settled in, sitting sideways so I could drape my legs over one arm. The air was fresh and clean, a light breeze easing the heat of the late summer day. The sound of Gibson's power tools carried from his workshop. Gibson Bodine. He was such an enigma. Usually I was adept at getting to the heart of a person, at figuring out what made them tick. It was what made me good at my job. But Gibson was hard to crack. One thing I knew for sure, he was hiding a lot of pain behind that angry facade. What happened to you, Gibson? Who hurt you so badly? When I worked with a struggling artist or band, I liked to leave them with something that would keep them on the right track after I'd gone. I couldn't be there forever to make sure they didn't drift back into conflict or malaise or self-doubt. Sometimes I taught them meditation techniques to stay calm. I'd done conflict resolution role-playing, left a box of notes with things to spark creativity, and helped brainstorm ideas for hobbies that would give them some downtime. No one would ever believe how many badass rock stars I'd taught to crochet. I felt like Gibson needed something else in his life, something to soften him up a little, bring him some happiness. But what would make Gibson happy? He wasn't exactly a people person, that was obvious. His work seemed to be fulfilling, and he had his music. I thought back on Oliver's offer, but it was impossible to imagine Gibson as a rock star. He had the talent for it, no question, and the looks. Fans would eat up Gibson Bodine with a spoon. Even his prickly personality wouldn't be a problem, not from a popularity standpoint. His gruff demeanor combined with that husky voice of his, not to mention his rugged sex appeal, would be absolute catnip to millions. With the right backing, he'd be huge. And he'd hate it. Oliver would sign him in a heartbeat. And just to be sure I wasn't making the wrong assumption, I'd ask Gibson about it again. But I was almost positive I knew the answer. He didn't want that life. Some people did. They wanted fame and fortune and the rush of playing for a packed house. Thousands of people screaming their names, singing along to their songs. They lived for it. And you could tell those people from the ones who didn't. The ones who loved music, but didn't want the trappings of a life in the spotlight. Gibson was one of those. I was almost certain of it. I wondered if he'd ever considered getting a pet. Maybe a dog. I could see him with a sweet dog at his side, a loyal companion jumping in the passenger seat of his truck, tongue hanging out, curling up at his feet at the end of a long day, and the thought of Gibson with a puppy was ovary-melting. Maybe a dog would help. I'd have to see what he thought about the idea. Although thinking about leaving him with something made me think about leaving, which made my heart hurt. This little unrequited crush I was nursing kept growing. The fact that we were pretending to be together in public only made it worse. I found myself living for those moments when he'd hold my hand or wrap an arm around my shoulders. Snuggling with him at Scarlet's bonfire the other night had been like a daydream come true. I'd nestled into him and, for a little while, allowed myself to pretend it was real. I knew I was setting myself up for disappointment. We were just friends. That was how it had always been between us. He played the part well, when other people were watching. His touches felt awfully real. I was sure they looked convincing from the outside. But when we were alone, he kept his distance. It reminded me that this wasn't my home, and Gibson Bodine wasn't my boyfriend. The noise of power tools quieted. This little fantasy I harbored wasn't realistic anyway. Even if Gibson did see me that way, what would I do about it? My life wasn't here. As nice as it had been to visit Bootleg Springs again, that was all it was, a visit. It wasn't like I could stay. I pulled my song journal out of my bag and flipped through the pages. Snippets, unfinished lyrics, hastily scrawled melodies. I rarely jotted down more than a line or two. I wrote songs with other artists. I helped them get past their self-doubt to find the words and melodies that were waiting to come out. But writing my own songs had fallen by the wayside in the busyness of life on the road. But really, lack of time wasn't why I'd stopped writing. The songs in my head were too close to the truth. My truth. Every time I'd sat down with this book and a pen in my hand, I'd stalled out, just like the artists I was so good at helping. There was that hazy spot in my memory again. The box in my mind shook. Maybe being here would allow me to face whatever was inside, rattling around with so much noise. But whenever I tried, there was nothing. It was like a foggy night, nothing but darkness and mist. I closed the journal and put it back in my bag. I'd put all those things in the box for a reason. Maybe I just needed to let the rest stay there. I heard the noise of a door shutting, interrupting the quiet stillness of the afternoon. It sounded like Gibson had emerged from his workshop. A minute later, he stuck his head out the back door.
"Hey, I need a shower. Then we can head to the Tucker's place."
He had sawdust in his hair and a few flecks in his beard. I could smell the faint scent of wood from here. "Okay, I think I'll change into something a little nicer." His eyes flicked up and down.
"If you want."
Without another word, he went inside. To the outside world, Gibson and his girlfriend Maya were having dinner with Harlan and Nadine Tucker. In reality, this was a chance for the sheriff to interview me without blowing my cover. I appreciated that they were willing to do this for me, but I was nervous. This was the next step in not only revealing who I really was, but hopefully bringing the truth about Judge Kendall into the light, which scared me to no end. I couldn't keep my real identity hidden forever. I'd already noticed a few people giving me curious looks in town. For now, our story was working, but news of who I really was would get out eventually. Plus, I didn't want to keep it from Bootleg much longer. This town had held out hope for me for so long, and I wanted more than anything to tell them I was alive, to thank them for never giving up on me. I loved them for that, more than I knew how to express. I went inside to change and paused outside the bathroom door, listening to the sound of the shower. The thought of Gibson in there, hot water streaming over his body, made me tingly between the legs. I had a momentary urge to strip off my clothes, jump in, and surprise him. If I'd thought he wanted me, I'd have done it right there and then. There was nothing wrong with a little friendly sex between two people who weren't exactly dating. I wasn't an innocent girl anymore. I'd had a fling or three. But I wasn't getting an attracted-to-you vibe from Gibbs. He was protective, which I enjoyed, and did his part to make it look like we were together. But despite those little moments, like his arm around me at the bonfire, or the way he'd looked at me when we'd been singing together, I felt the force of his friend zoning. So I let it go. I went into his bedroom, where I'd been keeping my things, and changed into a cute summer dress. It was one of my favorites because it never wrinkled, no matter how scrunched up it was in my bag. Gibson pushed the door open behind me, and I turned. Oh, dear sweet Lord, he was in nothing but a towel, slung low around his hips, his skin damp and glistening. My eyes traced down the length of his body, past a dusting of chest hair, solid abs, a trail of body hair that disappeared beneath that towel. A droplet of water slid down his chest between his pecs, tracing a wet path to his belly button. Holy shit. With clothes on, Gibson was ruggedly handsome in a don't approach me kind of way, but half naked, he was stunning. A glorious specimen of rough, powerful man that sent my hormones into a tailspin of unbridled lust.
Sorry, he said, backing out the door. Didn't realize you were in here.
No, it's fine, I choked out, then cleared my throat to try to cover. I'm done. We stood there for a long moment, staring at each other. A slip of his hand and that towel would drop right to the floor. As if powered by a force I couldn't control, my eyes slid down his body again. Was he hard underneath that towel? I felt my cheeks warm, and I was not a blusher. He cleared his throat and moved aside. Tucking my hair behind my ear, I darted past him. I needed to get him out of my line of vision before I did something embarrassing, like licked the water off his neck. The bedroom door shut behind me, and I sank down onto the couch. What was I doing? Gibson and I had been good friends, but I'd never been so crazy around him. When we were younger, even my little teenage crush hadn't been that big of a deal. I'd liked him, but it hadn't bothered me that we couldn't be more. I hadn't thought about it all that much, just enjoyed spending time with him. And that time sure had been special. Chapter 15, Callie. 13 years ago. Moonshine Diner was packed, the smell of sunscreen thick in the air. It seemed like half the population of Bootleg Springs High School had decided to come in from the midday heat, piling into booths for the lunch special, a pepperoni roll and a Pepsi. I sat with Tanya Varney and Lacey Dickerson, sipping what was left of my Pepsi. It was mostly ice now. They leaned close to each other, whispering and giggling about the boys in the booth behind us. They lived here year-round, so they knew each other well. But like all the kids in Bootleg, they were always nice to me when I was here summers. Included me like I was one of them. It was one of the reasons I liked it here.
What about you, Callie? Tanya asked. Do you have a boyfriend back at school?
No, there aren't any boys I like enough.
That was partially true.
There were plenty of boys at my high school in Virginia who were cute, but none that I liked that way. But it wouldn't have mattered if I had. My parents would never allow me to date. However, I didn't like talking about my parents unless I had to, so I left that part out.
Really? She asked. Not a single one?
I shrugged. Not really.
I bet you could date Amos Sheridan if you wanted to, Lacey said, lowering her voice.
He was sitting right behind us.
He's so cute, and I bet he likes you.
My eyes flicked to the boys in the other booth. Amos was cute. A lot of the boys in Bootleg Springs were cute. It made hanging out at the lake with all the local kids more fun. The other girls mooned over them, and the boys loved to show off. Fun or not, I was more of an observer than a participant. I had to be.
I don't know, Lacey, I said. I bet he likes you more than me. Oh my God, Bowie Bodine just walked in, Tanya whispered. He's so gorgeous.
Bowie sauntered in, wearing a battered baseball cap and a t-shirt that showed his athletic frame. Like all the Bodine boys, he was nice to look at. He paused at a small table near the window and said something to his brother Jameson.
Jameson was my age, but I didn't know him very well. He was quiet and mostly spent time with Leah Mae Larkin. They weren't dating as far as I knew. They acted more like friends. Friends who'd known each other since they were little.
She spent summers here now, kind of like I did, except it was because her parents had divorced and she'd gone to live with her mom in Florida. I liked Leah Mae, but we didn't hang out much. She was always off somewhere with Jameson.
Bowie's 18, Lacey hissed. That means he's like a grown-up. What does that have to do with anything? Tanya asked. He's only 2 years older.
Are y'all talking about my brother again?
Scarlett Bodine squished into the booth with Lacey and Tanya, and her best friend Cassidy Tucker slid in next to me. Scarlett and Cassidy were a couple of years younger, but they were nice girls. I'd always liked Scarlett's sass.
No,
Tanya said, but Lacey gave her the side eye.
Okay, yeah, but I can't help it. He's so cute.
Scarlett rolled her eyes.
I guess. He's a pain in the ass, though. All my brothers are.
Shh, he's coming, Tanya said.
Bowie paused by our table. He grabbed Cassidy's ponytail and gave it a little tug.
Hey, Trouble.
Then he playfully punched Scarlett's shoulder. Scarlett rubbed her arm while Cassidy grinned up at him.
Don't punch me, you big fart face.
Scarlett socked him in the arm.
Ow, Bowie said, grabbing his arm. What gives, Scar? I barely touched you.
Scarlett gave him a smug smile. He grumbled something and walked away, heading for a table near the back. I noticed Cassidy didn't take her eyes off him.
You're so gonna marry him, Scarlett said.
Shut up, I am not, Cassidy said, but her smile said otherwise. Amos turned and leaned over into our booth.
Y'all done? We're heading back to the lake.
Sure, Lacey said with a giggle.
We'll see you down there,
Scarlett said, standing to let Tanya and Lacey out.
Cass and I want to get some lunch.
Cassidy stood so I could get out. We said goodbye, then I followed Tanya and Lacey out the door. The knot of boys came out right after us. I pulled on my sleeves, even though it was hot out today. Maybe I'd dip my feet in the lake to cool off. The water was bathwater warm, but it still felt refreshing, and wearing short sleeves wasn't an option. An engine rumbled behind me. I glanced over my shoulder and my heart did a little flip. Gibbs and Bodine drove by slow in his beat-up old pickup truck. He had his windows rolled down, music turned up. He wore a black muscle shirt that showed off his muscular arms and a pair of dark sunglasses. The other girls stared, open-mouthed. Gibson Bodine was equal parts fascinating and intimidating. The type of guy the girls my age were both afraid of, and drawn to, like flies to honey.
The big, bad, older guy, with stubble on his square jaw and a heart-stopping smile. A little scary, a little dangerous, a lot sexy. And these girls had no idea he was my friend. I held that secret like a treasure. I had a lot of secrets, far too many for a 16-year-old girl, but this was the one I cherished. A happy secret instead of a terrible one, but still something I had to keep to myself. So I didn't wave when he drove by. He didn't acknowledge me either. He didn't need to. We both knew.
"Last one in the lake is a bug-eyed catfish," Amos yelled, then took off running down the street.
The rest of the boys followed, yelling insults at each other as they went. Tanya and Lacey started to follow.
"You coming, Callie?"
I made sure not to glance in the direction Gibson had gone.
"I'll catch up with you later."
"Okay, see ya."
I turned in the opposite direction, walking up Lake Drive while the girls headed toward the lake. Sneaking away was easy. The kids and teens of Bootleg Springs roamed the town until dusk all summer long, everyone coming and going, forming small groups, then breaking off to form new ones. No one seemed to miss me when I wandered off. Technically, I wasn't violating any of my parents' rules, although there was no way they'd approve of me hanging out with Gibson Bodine. He was 20, and most people thought of him as the bad boy in town. I knew better. He wasn't bad. Misunderstood, maybe, but not bad. But I still couldn't let my parents find out. Making sure no one was watching, I cut between two buildings and made for the woods. Not far into the trees, I left the trail. I knew my way. Gibson had showed me a clearing that was deep enough in the forest that it was secluded and quiet, but close enough that I could easily make it home by dark, even if we lost track of time. We did that pretty often. I picked my way through the trees, careful not to stub my toe on the forest debris. As much as I worried about getting caught, I never hesitated to come. I couldn't resist. Gibson was already there, sitting on a fallen log, tuning his guitar. He usually parked on a dirt road and came in from the opposite direction. He looked up at me and smiled.
"Hey, Cal."
I tugged on my sleeves, making sure they were pulled all the way down. Gibson and I shared a secret, but he didn't know my other ones.
"Hey, Gibbs."
"I learned a new song."
He strummed a chord.
"Worked it out by ear, but I think I have it right."
"What song?" I lowered myself onto the log next to him.
"Let's see if you can guess."
He strummed a few more times. I picked up on the melody instantly.
"That's It's Your Love. It's a duet."
"I thought you'd like that."
Smiling, he continued playing. I listened for a minute, letting the music wash over me. I never felt as peaceful as I did when I was out here in the woods with Gibson. It wasn't his bad boy reputation or his formidable good looks that made me risk my parents' wrath to spend time with him. It was the connection we shared. The blissful relaxation of being away, alone in the woods, nothing but our voices and his guitar. He looped around and started the song again, this time adding the words. His voice was like warm maple syrup, smooth and rich. I listened for a few bars, then found the harmony, singing along. He smiled as he sang, nodding to me in approval. There was magic out here. The secrets I kept locked up so tight didn't exist. The weight on my shoulders lifted as I sang, as if our music wove a protective cocoon around us both. I was never as happy as when I was singing in the woods with Gibson Bodine. Chapter 16, Maya. Gibson pounded his fist against the Tuckers' front door. I stood next to him, resisting the urge to slip my hand in his. We weren't pretending to be together tonight. I hadn't seen the Tuckers in person yet, but they already knew the truth about me. So there was no need to perpetuate the Gibson's girlfriend Maya story. So I kept my hand firmly by my side. But I was riddled with anxiety. I felt like Callie again. A girl with too many secrets, trying to hold the threads of her life together, afraid of what it would mean to reveal the truth. I took a deep breath. I'd be safe here. We weren't in public where someone could overhear, and I knew the Tuckers were trustworthy. But the box in my mind bumped as if the demons inside could sense their time was coming. There were so many things inside, things I still couldn't see. Gibson took my hand and squeezed. That little gesture of reassurance calmed my racing heart. Glancing up at him, I squeezed back. Harlan Tucker opened the door, greeting us with a smile. His mustache had gone white, as had his hair, and he wore a flannel shirt with jeans. His wife, Nadine, appeared at his side, looking just as pretty as I remembered. Her silvery blonde hair was pulled back, and her green eyes were bright. "Oh, sweet heavens, look at you," Nadine said. "Come in, come in." They ushered us inside and shut the door. It wasn't quite dark out, but I noticed the curtains had been drawn. I didn't know if that was on purpose, but I appreciated it nonetheless. It made me feel a little more secure. Nadine wiped a tear from the corner of her eye. "My goodness, Callie Kendall, is it really you?" I nodded, and before I could answer, she wrapped me in a tight hug. I hugged her back, blinking against the sudden sting of tears.
Now, let's not smother the poor girl," Harlan said.
Nadine didn't let go.
"I haven't seen her in 13 years, Harlan. I'll smother her all I want."
I laughed. Her motherly hug was nice.
"Smother away, Mrs. Tucker."
She pulled back but held my arms.
"Call me Nadine. It's so good to see you. I almost didn't believe it when Harlan told me the news. I've been dying to get a proper look at you. What a lovely woman you've become."
"Thank you." A part of me wanted to shy away from her scrutiny. The scar on my face was a frustrating reminder of what I'd been through, and I knew it was often the first thing people noticed. But her eyes didn't linger there. She seemed to take all of me in, looking at me like an aunt who hadn't seen her niece in a long time.
"Mom, are you going to let them come inside, or should we move the table to the front door?"
Cassidy asked. She stood in the living room with Bowie, his arm wrapped around her shoulders.
"Oh, don't get your knickers in a twist."
Nadine let go of my arms.
"I'm just so darn excited to see you."
Gibson stood to the side, his arms crossed, his eyes never leaving me. Bowie patted him on the shoulder.
"Calm down, Gibbs. It's just us here."
He grunted, dropping his arms to his sides, but he didn't move or take his eyes off me.
"Dinner is just about ready," Nadine said, ushering us in. "Let's have a good meal before things get too serious."
I felt Gibson's hand on the small of my back while we walked into the dining room. Why was he doing that? Not that I minded. The gentle pressure of his big hand was calming, but also a little bit confusing. Maybe touching me when other people were around had simply become a habit already. We sat together at their cozy table while Bowie and Cassidy helped Nadine bring in dinner. The scent of roasted chicken and gravy filled the air, making my mouth water. The meal was amazing, home cooking at its finest. Nadine kept the conversation light and lively, asking easy-to-answer questions of me and the others at the table. Gibson didn't say much, but he was very polite to the Tuckers. I had a feeling it meant he liked them. He certainly respected them. We finished eating, and Bowie helped Nadine clear the table.
"I suppose we should get down to business."
Harlan folded his hands together, resting his elbows on the table.
"Callie, We're going to need you to take a DNA test.
It's not that we don't believe you, Cassidy said. I know you're who you say you are, but we're going to need proof.
Of course, I expected that.
Good, Harlan said. Cassidy filled me in on your story, but let me see if I have this right. You left home because you were being abused.
I nodded, feeling Gibson stiffen beside me. That's correct.
And Jonah Bodine Sr. found you and helped you get out of town.
I looked down at the table, my throat suddenly thick, my heart racing. It was so hard to talk about this. I felt raw and exposed, like the old wounds on my arms would break open and start bleeding again.
It's okay, dear, Nadine said, returning to her seat. Take your time.
Bowie quietly took his chair next to Cassidy.
Yes, he helped me. I was injured, and he took care of me as best he could. The next day, he and Mrs. Bodine helped me reach out to a friend I knew I could trust and arranged for a place to go. Mr. Bodine drove me there.
Did you ask him to keep your whereabouts a secret?
Harlan asked. We came up with the plan together. He didn't want to put his family in danger, but he also wasn't willing to send me back. We decided I needed to disappear.
I see,
Harlan said, nodding thoughtfully.
I have a question about your new identity, Cassidy said. How'd you manage to get ID? You said you traveled a lot, but you'd need a passport for that.
Someone in Blue Moon arranged it for me. He said he knew a guy who knew a guy, or something like that. I realize that's not exactly legal. I winced.
I was just curious, Cassidy said.
I reckon your passport and whatnot aren't really our concern,
Harlan said.
We have bigger issues to deal with here.
I tucked my hair behind my ear. I want you to know I'm ready to come forward. Gibson put up a hand.
No, she can't. Gibson,
Harlan said, his tone gentle.
We're not going to make any rash decisions. I agree with y'all keeping her identity secret for the time being. It was the right thing to do, and I don't think that's changed. Callie, if you come forward now, it's your word against theirs. They'll claim your injuries were self-harm and you ran away.
What about the forensics report?
Bowie asked.
She's sitting right here. Clearly that body ain't her.
We have to prove the judge was behind it, Harlan said. It's damn suspicious, but that's not enough. And you need to understand, I don't have the jurisdiction to run a proper investigation against Judge Kendall, not when it crosses state lines. I need to get the FBI involved.
So how do we do that? Gibson asked.
We, meaning law enforcement, Harlan said, need to find enough evidence that they'll take over the case. Right now, we have theories and suspicions, but not enough to go to the feds.
He's a high-profile man, Cassidy said. Even more now that he's up for a federal position.
Which makes our job harder,
Harlan said.
It'll be too easy for him to argue it's a baseless smear campaign designed to lose him his federal appointment.
And it also means he has a lot to lose, Nadine said.
Exactly, Harlan said. Which is why I'm glad y'all kept Callie's identity quiet. We don't want this to get out too soon. Believe me, I'll do everything in my power to get the right people involved.
Flashes ran through my mind. Old memories, long since locked away, things I hadn't thought about in years. Judge Kendall was involved with some terrible people. I think you should assume he still is.
What kind of people?
Cassidy asked, her voice gentle. Organized crime, type of people, I said, searching those old memories for meaning. I heard things sometimes that I wasn't supposed to. He had agreements in place. He'd make sure their people went free or received reduced sentences, I think in exchange for money or sometimes favors.
Could you identify any of those people?
Harlan asked. I'm not sure. It's been a long time. A lot of my memories are fuzzy. But if I saw them, I think I could. Harlan smoothed his mustache with his thumb and forefinger.
I see. I'll keep that in mind.
Here's what I don't understand, Cassidy said. Your parents always claimed you were depressed. Your mother even showed me a photo of the cuts on your arms, claiming it was self-harm. Did she know that it wasn't? Is that why she didn't show it to the authorities at first?
Maybe that was a cry for help, Nadine said. She's been married to that monster for a long time. Maybe she was hoping you wouldn't believe Callie had done it to herself and that you'd uncover the truth.
That's possible, I suppose, Cassidy said, her expression pensive. Callie, do you think your father was abusing your mother as well?
A rush of anxiety hit me like a truck. The box in my mind howled and shook, banging against the floor. Memories pushed at the edge of my consciousness. But when I tried to bring them forward, there was nothing but darkness and mist. I could almost feel the pain in my arms. The scars I'd covered with ink, red and bleeding. But I couldn't remember it happening. I'd locked it away too deep.
Hey,
Gibson said, putting an arm around my shoulders.
You all right?
I nodded. I'm sorry, some things are just so hard to remember. But I don't think I ever saw him do anything to hurt her.
Now, I know it's been a long time, but if there's anything else you can tell us, maybe it'll lead us to the proof we need,
Harlan said. I wish I could remember more specifics, I said. I know I heard him threaten people, and he talked about bribes and blackmail. Once in a while, that was dinner conversation. I don't remember what my mother had to say about that. I paused again, reaching back. There was so much more, I could feel it.
You're doing good,
Gibson whispered. His soft encouragement helped. I always had the sense that my father was like a spider, with a big web of contacts and associates. A lot of them were political, but some were criminals, and he was at the center, directing all of it.
People working for him, probably with degrees of separation, Harlan said.
Keeping his hands clean, Cassidy added.
Harlan nodded.
One thing I'm certain about, he doesn't want his daughter turning up, especially now. I suspect he has concerns about how much incriminating evidence you have against him, and they're still watching our investigation.
I blew out a frustrated breath. I had no doubt the judge was worried about what I'd tell the authorities. Deep inside, I knew the reason for the scars on my arms had something to do with punishing me into silence. I'd heard things he didn't want me to tell. But there was still a piece missing.
They're still watching? Cassidy asked. How do you know?
Their lawyer called the station this morning. He said he'd gotten word that we might have discovered a new witness. He was clearly referring to Gibson.
Gibson made a low noise in his throat. A sick feeling spread through my stomach, and I took a sip of water to wash down the taste of bile.
The whole town knows you brought him in and why, Cassidy said. They could have heard it from anyone.
They could have, Harlan said. But it's a reminder that we need to tread carefully. This is a man who's avoided the law for a very long time. We might only get one shot at him. That's why I don't think we should have Callie come forward yet. Child abuse is serious, but after all this time, it'll be hard to prove, especially against a man like him who knows how to work the system.
So what do we do? I asked.
For now, we keep your secret, he said. You're Maya Davis. You keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep doing our job, looking for enough evidence to get the right people involved.
I wish there was something more I could give you, I said.
It's all right, Harlan said. You were just a child. I'll tell you one thing. It's a pleasure to no longer be investigating your disappearance. Now we're finally focused on bringing down the monster who hurt you.
I nodded. Thank you.
All right, everyone, we need to clear out all this bad juju, Nadine said, getting up from the table. How about some pie?
Bad juju, Mom,
Cassidy asked with a laugh, and got up to follow Nadine into the kitchen.
Y'all know what I mean, Nadine said with a wave of her hand.
I glanced at Gibson, and he met my eyes. There was a softness there, reassurance. It sent a warm, tingly feeling through me, chasing away the fear. I was still worried about him, the judge, whether we could find enough proof. But when he looked at me like that, his gaze gentle, the corner of his mouth turned up in the barest hint of a smile, it was easier to feel brave. And harder to keep from feeling a whole mess of other things.
Chapter 17. Gibson. Still blinking the sleep from my eyes, I poured myself a cup of coffee. I heard soft footsteps coming down the hall, and my back prickled like a cool breeze had brushed my neck. Callie came into the kitchen, showing way too much skin in a little tank top and shorts. She gave me a sleepy smile, but it was hard to know where to look. The soft lines of her neck curved into her shoulders, and a tendril of hair hung across her collarbone. Without really meaning to, my eyes dipped to her chest, to the tempting roundness of her tits. I tore my eyes away, hoping she hadn't noticed. Damn it, Gibson.
Morning.
She grabbed a mug out of the cupboard and poured herself a cup.
Did you sleep okay?
Fine, I muttered.
Are you sure? Because I keep telling you, I'll take the couch and you can have your bedroom back.
Don't worry about it. She'd been here a little over a week, and she said that every morning, but I wasn't having it. I couldn't do much for her, but keeping her comfortable was something. Besides, I kind of liked having her in my bed, even if I wasn't in it with her. Made no sense, but a lot of things didn't make sense since she'd reappeared, like why I couldn't stop seeing her every time I closed my eyes, and why those images kept turning to her getting naked. I sat down with my coffee, but it was hard to be still. I had too much adrenaline in my system lately, made me edgy. Truth be told, I was itching for a fight. A good fuck would do it too, but that certainly wasn't happening. I needed something to take the edge off. I had too much on my mind, too many feelings swirling around my gut. Maybe I'd go to the lookout tonight. There was always someone looking to start shit with me there. Sure, I'd be coming in hot, looking for trouble, but I just needed to feel my knuckles crunch against something solid. Maybe take a good hit across the chin, taste a little blood. A little bar brawl among friends was a great way to blow off some steam. Callie's lavender scent reached my nose a heartbeat before she joined me at the table. God, that girl. She was riling me up in ways I was having a hard time containing. My eyes drifted across the smooth skin of her shoulder, imagining my lips there, my teeth. I tore my eyes away, again, looked into my mug like my black coffee held the secrets of the universe.
Have you ever thought about getting a dog?
What? She took a sip of coffee and grinned.
A dog, you know, man's best friend, loyal companion, tail wagging all over the place.
I was glad for something else to focus on, although it still felt like an effort to keep my ass on this side of the table. I wanted to toss her over my shoulder and haul her to my bedroom like a caveman. I know what dogs are.
You seem like a dog person, she said. I'm kind of surprised you don't have one.
I like being alone.
Do you, though?
Like a knee-jerk reaction I couldn't control, I stood and walked a few steps away. Why the fuck was she analyzing my life? I needed a dog. I was doing just fine. If I needed anything, it was to bury my fist in someone's face. Damn it, I needed to stop. I didn't want to yell at her when she hadn't done anything wrong, and I was still a little bit afraid she'd up and disappear again. Another reason I was on edge. Every time I left, I kept wondering if she'd be gone when I got back, or if I'd imagined the whole thing and she'd never really been here at all. I clenched my fists and took a deep breath. Why do you want to know if I've thought about getting a dog?
Just wondering,
she said, her voice casual. She either couldn't tell I'd been about to snap at her, or it didn't bother her.
Like I said, you seem like a dog person.
I turned toward her and rubbed the back of my neck, but didn't sit down. I felt like I couldn't get too close to her right now. It was hard enough just breathing the same air. If I kept smelling that lavender scent, I was going to lose my mind. I like dogs fine, just don't know if I'm cut out to take care of another living thing.
Really? You've been taking excellent care of me.
Turning away, I grumbled something incoherent, but hearing her say that made a warm, contented feeling spread through my chest. I need to go into town. Want to come?
I'd love to. Do you mind waiting, though? I need a shower.
I had to stop myself from groaning. No, it's fine. I'll just be out here dying of this perpetual hard-on while you're naked in my shower. I can wait. She finished her coffee and went into the bathroom. I paced around the house, listening to the water run. I felt guilty for the way my dick ached with unrelieved tension. Callie was a friend. Even after everything she'd been through, she trusted me. I couldn't let all this shit I was feeling mess that up. I thought about calling Jonah to see if he wanted to go for a run today. It was a testament to how keyed up I was. I hated running, but maybe it would help me burn off some of this fucking energy. After she came out of the bathroom, I took a quick shower and threw on some clean clothes. By the time I finished, she was ready to go. Her colorful hair was wavy and still a little damp, and she'd put on a tank top and denim shorts. Her purple toenails matched her hair. She was all smiles and idle chit-chat on the way into town. I still felt like I had a seam about to burst open. She looked good and smelled good, and as soon as we were in public, I'd be reminded that she felt good too, even if it was just her hand in mine. Sure enough, we got out of the truck, and she slipped that soft little hand of hers into mine. The skin contact was both soothing and arousing. I didn't even think about letting go. I wanted to surround her, cocoon her in my arms so I could protect her. Being in public made me edgy, like I half expected the Kendalls to pop out around every corner. She squeezed my hand.
How about this? I want to stop in and say hi to Leah May, then go grab a few things I need at the Poppin' girl stuff.
She winked.
If you're still busy when I get done, I'll wait for you at Moonshine.
My brow furrowed, and unconsciously, I pulled her a little closer to me. I didn't like this plan.
I have my phone,
she said, as if she could read my thoughts.
I'll be fine.
All right, I grumbled. I'll walk you to Leah May's shop. Reluctantly, I left her at Boots and Lace. Leah May had other customers, but Callie still wanted to stay. Maybe the upside was that she might buy another dress. The one she'd worn the other night had looked damn good on her. Nothing wrong with a beautiful girl in a pretty dress. And there I went again, thinking about her all wrong. I had a meeting with a client around the corner. Betty Sue Wheatfield owned a little bookstore tucked in an old storefront that had once been someone's house. She and her husband were looking to fix up the place, wanted me to make built-in shelves to replace the rickety freestanding ones they had. I pushed open the door and inhaled the scent of old paper and leather. Bookshelves crowded the tiny space, books packed tight. There was a shabby old armchair below a four-paned window, the glass so old it was starting to warp. A small digital screen sat on the counter where the register used to be. The modern device looked odd in this throwback of a store. Puck, the shop's cat, came around a corner to eye me curiously. He was all black except for his white feet and a patch of white on the end of his long tail. I crouched down to scratch him behind the ears.
"Hi, Gibson,"
Betty Sue said, her voice cheery. She was in her 50s, with smile lines around her eyes and graying blonde hair pulled back from her face.
"Sorry, I didn't hear you come in."
I straightened, leaving Puck to rub up against my legs, probably looking for more attention. "I just need to take some measurements."
"Have at it."
I pulled the tape measure off my belt and got to work. It was tough to get around all the existing shelves and clutter, and Puck kept trying to walk under my feet, but I got what I needed, scrawling numbers on my little spiral notepad. When I finished, I tucked my pencil behind my ear and clipped the tape measure back on my belt. "All done." Betty Sue poked her head out of the back.
"How are we looking?"
"I'll run the numbers and get you a quote." I glanced around at the room, looking past the shelves to the building itself. "Y'all have some wall damage and loose trim. Since you're clearing out to get new shelves anyway, you could fix all that and the loose floorboards. Get Scarlett on in here and she'll take care of you." She smiled.
"Much obliged. I'll do that."
I tipped my chin to her and left, squinting in the summer sunshine after the relative dimness of the old shop. I needed some new clamps and a package of sandpaper for my sander, so I headed over to the rusty tool. Found what I needed, I knew this store like the back of my hand, and went to the front to pay. I hadn't been gone long, but I wanted to get back to Callie. Didn't much like leaving her alone in town. It was only because I was concerned for her safety, not because I liked being around her so much. Jimmy Bob Prosser was at the front, dressed in a rusty tulle t-shirt and jeans. The fact that his daughter was the spawn of evil had never made me dislike him. It wasn't his fault. I didn't know why Misty Lynn was the way she was. Maybe the bad genes had come from her mama. Jimmy Bob had always been a good guy.
"Hey there, Gibson," he said. "This all for you?"
"That'll do it." Jenny came in, wearing a sundress that made her green eyes stand out. She smiled, first at me, then at Jimmy Bob.
"Well, if it isn't two of my favorite guys."
I was one of her favorites. I was the son of the man who'd left her, pregnant and alone, after he'd cheated on my mother, and I looked almost exactly like him. But Jenny had always been nothing but nice to me. Especially since she'd come clean about Callie being alive.
"Hi, Miss Jenny," I said.
"Look at you, pretty as summer sunshine," Jimmy Bob said.
She beamed at him.
"Sorry I'm early. I can wait until you're ready to go to lunch."
"What time do you have to work?"
he asked.
"Not until 2.
Jenny was working with Wit and Clarabelle over at Moonshine now. Word in town was that she'd be taking over the diner when they retired. Jimmy Bob leaned to the side, turning to yell toward the back of the store.
"Hey, Carl, can you come on up here?"
Carl scurried out, his skinny arms so pale it looked like he'd never seen the sun. The crop of red hair on his head stuck out at odd angles, and the only thing that made him look his 18 years was his height. Kid was tall, but still had a baby face. He'd started working for Jimmy Bob last year.
"I need you to work the front while I go to lunch,"
Jimmy Bob said.
"Sure thing,"
Carl said with a nod. Jimmy Bob took my cash, gave me some change, and handed me a bag. He looked over at Jenny.
"I'll be right back."
She smiled again. She was always smiling.
"I'll be right here."
I put away my wallet and nodded to Jenny. "Ma'am?"
"Oh, don't ma'am me, Gibbs."
She opened her arms.
"We're not strangers. Come here."
I gave her a stiff hug, feeling awkward. She gently patted me on the back and pulled away, putting her hands on my arms.
"How are you doing, honey?"
"Fine."
"How's Maya?"
"She's fine." She raised an eyebrow.
"Fine? That's it?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, I'll take that for now,"
she said.